sports stadiums and large public venues come in all shapes and sizes. Some have domes, some have natural grass fields, some have banked concrete ovals where cars drive fast. While no two stadiums may be perfectly alike, there's one thing that all stadiums today have in common: a reliance on technology. This is the Stadium Tech Report podcast, where we talk to people on both ends of the stadium technology equation, including the stadium technology teams who deploy it and use it, and the vendors and service providers who supply it. I'm Paul Kapuska, editor of the Stadium Tech Report, and your host on the Stadium Tech Report podcast. Does your venue need a high-capacity, reliable network to provide a better fan experience? Did you know that Matsing's innovative lens antennas provide the highest capacity connectivity in stadiums and arenas globally, with only a few antennas needed to cover entire venues? Contact Matsing at matsing.com to discuss your venue's advanced connectivity needs.
JMA is a leading provider of distributed antenna systems in hundreds of stadiums worldwide, delivering the best performance, highest reliability, and lowest total cost of ownership. Our platform ensures that you're 5G ready when it comes time to add a private wireless 5G network to your existing venue infrastructure without a rip and replace, providing a foundation of wireless connectivity to improve the fan experience while reducing operating costs for stadium owners and broadcasters. Visit jmawireless.com/app to explore more.
Checkout-free concession stands are easily the hottest topic in stadium technology these days, and that's no hype. Our own very recent stadium connectivity survey said that checkout-free concession stands were the number one initiative that venue respondents are looking towards for 2024. With over 100 new stores opened over the last year, that's proof in the pudding that these things are working for stadiums, both for fans and for stadiums and teams alike. Our guest today is Steve Carlin, CEO of iFi, one of the top deployers of checkout-free concession stands. Steve, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Paul. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, I think we'll have a great talk about this. I'd like to start out with just sort of a general question first. Can you just tell us, what are the few top reasons that you see or that iFi sees why checkout-free technology is so attractive for stadium concessions?
Yeah, I think there's two key components to that. One is for the shopper, otherwise known as the fan in a stadium setting. The other is for the commercial side of this, the F&B operator and the sports team, the ownership themselves. So the fans, obviously, when you're at a game, your number one thing is to try to get back to the game as fast as you can. I think that's true, by the way, of all retail locations, but especially acute when you're talking about a live event. And so, you know, if you can reduce the amount of time it takes to go get your concessions from, say, 70 or 80 seconds down to 15, like we've shown with some of our stores, it's a worlds of difference. Now you're going to potentially go multiple times. You're going to be able to get what you want, get back to this, to the game as fast as you can and cheer on your home team. And then from the operator's side, now you've got a throughput advantage that you never had. You know, typically they benchmark on what they call per caps. Basically, how's the store doing now versus some period in time in the past? They're always looking to increase their throughput. And it's just really difficult to do that when you've got a belly up location, got cashiers and staff oftentimes that are rotating. This isn't maybe their normal job, or they're new to the job, or what have you. You know, you're just adding friction to the system. So the throughputs tend to be between 3 and 8x better when you're using this kind of technology. That means their per caps are going up considerably. It means the fan is happy, so the ownership is happy. So there's a lot of benefits across the board, and I think that's probably why you're seeing this being the number one opportunity for these locations as of today.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And from what I've seen going and visiting some of these deployments live too, it's a lot of these are being put in places where there wasn't anything before, a wide concourse area. You know, you just fit them in. You know, it's almost like free money. Why don't we talk a little bit about your background? You know, tell us a little bit about your journey, where you were at before, and you know, why it became sort of attractive for you to sort of move into the spot here at iFi.
Sure. I have a sort of a classic operator's background. I spent just about 15 total years in classic packaged goods, working with global retailers. And then moved into the technology space, leading technology companies, advising startups, ultimately into venture capital. I focused a good bit on retail automation, retail technology. So it was a natural fit to step in here to lead this organization. You know, I give the team such great credit. They were founded in 2016 and they focused on a real problem, which is people don't like to wait in line. They just don't. And they built a system to go solve that problem. It's fascinating to me, having sort of that classic background, how many young startups don't focus on an actual issue. They solve a technology problem and then they look around and try to figure out where could that technology be put deployed. And that's just not the way to do it. And this, you know, kudos to this team. And so I stepped in 2022 and have been just focusing the team on our operational and commercial strategies and just bolstering those and getting them to be in line with what our product can offer and the value proposition we create. And so it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, and iFi is a little bit different than some of the other providers in this space. And maybe you could just spend a minute talking about the technology, you know, how it works, why it's a little bit different, and what are like the biggest hurdles to get that to work in a stadium environment.
Yeah, I think one of the things I've just been so impressed with, our engineering team is really world-class, and it's led by a gentleman who did his PhD in cyber physical systems, which is a very fancy way of saying cashierless checkout.
Yeah,
basically.
You may have to try that one out.
Right. I was so impressed when he said that phrase and I had to write it down. But look, it's technology that tracks people and objects through space. And I think that approach, the way that we approached the issue and the problems, lend itself really nicely to this value proposition, which is not needing to have a cashier. And is a little bit different in that we don't need too many different sensor modalities in this solution. We literally only use cameras. We've tried other ones and we will incorporate some other ones in the future, but we don't have to put electrified shelving in to accommodate weight sensors. We don't have to use specific built cameras. These are off-the-shelf cameras we use. The flexibility that provides us allows us a competitive differentiator in the marketplace, which I think is sort of at the heart of your question. And I think that the second piece of your question was, and how does it lend itself to these environments? You made a really good point. You're seeing some of these stores popping up in places that weren't really designed to be stores per se. And certainly we've done that as well. And the flexibility that our system allows you to go take these spaces that are typically, you know, for your listener, these are typically spaces that are, because of the architecture, they weren't readily, you know, useful for a lot of commerce. But now they could be, because you only need, say, 10, 12, 15 feet however long you want a drink lane to be. And you can plop in something that allows your fans to have a lot more access to the foods and beverages that they want at the top of their concourse. So they don't have to start walking around or queuing up at the choke points, which are sort of the existing spaces. So I think that flexibility is our differentiator and allows for a lot of potential in these locations and live event arenas.
That's great. I know, going back, you know, to my opening, I like to hype things up a little bit, but it's still not. I'm curious, is there still a challenge when it comes to venues, you know, convincing venue people who for years, right, didn't really do anything innovative with concessions, that this can work? Has that changed over the past 2 years that you've been doing this, or do you still see a lot of resistance?
I suspect you know the answer is yes, it has changed. But here's what's so interesting, Paul. It doesn't really matter if you're talking to a food and beverage provider at a massive stadium, or you're talking to a convenience store operator or a grocery store operator or any other retail operator. If the existing footprint is already running, typically the operations team doesn't want to do anything that's going to disrupt that apple cart, right? And the reason being, they have these metrics. They have per caps, like we just talked about, or what's called same store sales in sort of more classic retail, dollars per square foot. If you are messing around with the store, you're shutting it down to go put in a lot of technology or what have you, you are disadvantaging yourself and in how these operators are metriced. And so back to your question, I see a lot of that same reticence, that same concern in this part of the retail marketplace, which is, hey, I've got to shut that concession stand down to put in cameras or run some Cat 5 cabling or whatever it is, put in gates. I'm just reticent to do it. Here's what we're seeing, though. I think the train has definitely left the station. You know that because you're tracking how many stores are out there. I think these F&B providers now fully understand, as soon as I have the CapEx room to do it, I'm going to see increased throughput. I'm going to see happier fans, better experience. I suspect the F&B providers who are putting in their RFPs to win the business are having to put this kind of thing into these RFPs just to showcase that they are on the cutting edge. So absolutely, the train has left the station. You've got sort of three strong players in this field, ourselves and a couple others that are going after it hard. And look, there's a finite number of these locations, right? So we have to kind of go after these now because these contracts get locked up. So I just think there's a lot of momentum here. It's, as you've pointed out in many of your articles, this is like sort of the premier use case for this technology, and it shows.
When we return, we'll find out just how big a business stadium stores are for iFi. More from Steve Carlin after the break. Does your venue need a high-capacity, reliable network to provide a better fan experience? Did you know that Matsing's innovative lens antennas provide the highest capacity connectivity in stadiums and arenas globally, with only a few antennas needed to cover entire venues? Contact Matsing at matsing.com to discuss your venue's advanced connectivity needs.
I'm curious, because I know iFi does other things and the other providers too, right? We talked a little bit about this offline. These kind of stores are very useful in other situations, airports, schools, campuses. How big a part of iFi's business right now is stadium? Is it a priority? Is it an equal chunk in terms of revenues and attention? And I'll save off the second half of this question. I have a second part to this question, but if you could get that first part first.
Yeah, it's a little less than half. I think we really like this business because even though these stores aren't open every day, all day, they're only open maybe 3 days a week, for that matter. In some cases, once every 2 weeks, depending upon which sports league you're in. But they do significantly more foot traffic than a typical sort of grab-and-go location like you just illustrated, an airport or what have you. It's quite intense, obviously. It's usually in a 4 or 5, 6 hour period. But nonetheless, we see some massive, massive throughput and thus, a lot of commerce for these food and beverage operators. So it's an important piece of our business. It's, like I said, it lends itself really nicely to the solution. So, we'll continue to push here.
It also has kind of a publicity factor too there, right? I mean, you're in a stadium. Taylor Swift doesn't go to convenience stores in her
fair enough
for yourself.
It's funny you mentioned Taylor Swift because she seems to keep popping up in my LinkedIn feed. Taylor Swift has no idea that this is actually happening. Let's just call a spade a spade.
Right.
Yeah, look, these are public locations. They get a lot of foot traffic, a lot of eyeballs. And so from our perspective, even though we may or may not have a big iFi sign out front, the people who make the decisions about what technology will be involved in their retail locations see these things and they understand the benefit and the value proposition. And so, yeah, it's hugely important to us just as a go-to-market strategy to be in places that are visible like this.
And let's talk about visibility for a second, because later this summer, perhaps one of the most visible new places is slated to open. And we're talking about Intuit Dome out in LA, House of Ballmer, Steve Ballmer. can you talk a little bit about that deal? Because it's, I know we're not talking yet about, or we haven't seen anything that you're free to talk about particulars if you'd like to, by the way. We know that you guys did strike a deal with them to be the checkout free provider. So talk a little bit about that. How did that all come together? Because it's, it's a really interesting, the whole place is an interesting story.
Yeah, I think you're just now seeing them come out and talk a little more openly. There was a great article last week, the week before, about Steve's vision with the Intuit Dome. And really, it boils down to a pretty simple concept. The home team has a competitive advantage by having their fans screaming and yelling for them. It's demonstrable. It's literally, several points in the basketball arena. And in order to maximize their ability to be in their seats screaming and yelling, he wants to employ technology across the board to make certain that their time around the stadium is facilitated and shortens everything from the number of, you know, trips to the bathroom and the time it takes to go to the bathroom to concessions to you name it. And so I really, you know, tip of the hat to them and their mission to just re-examine what is a pretty standard space and take the technology that's available today and even some that wasn't and create it in order to facilitate the fan experience. You know, so we've just been so pleased to be a partner of theirs. You know, it came down to, I think, us and a certain player in Seattle. And we were just really pleased that Steve, you know, handpicked us to be his partner in this vision. And so we're really excited about what 2024 has to hold with insofar as Intuit Dome. I think it will be fair to say it will be the benchmark and the bellwether for what facilities going forward will need to do in order to sort of be at the cutting edge. It's just really fascinating how they how they're approaching it and how they're utilizing this technology.
Yeah, and I think to get back to one of your earlier comments about startup people, for years running Stadium Tech Report, people say, "What do you do?" And I said, "Well, I talk about Wi-Fi in stadiums." And, you know, people are like, "Why do you need Wi-Fi in the stadium? Aren't you there to watch the game?" And it's like, well, you try to explain it's an enabling technology, but I sort of get the idea. Checkout free technology, on the other hand, is a technology. It's a new technology. But it seems that, to your point, this is something that's really directed at solving a fan problem, right? It's not technology for technology's sake. This is about the problem of, I don't want to miss the game. I don't want to miss the concert. I want to grab something, get something to eat, something to drink, and come back. And that seems to be a real, you know, that seems to be very meshed with the Ballmer idea.
Yeah, I agree. He understands what the LA fan is about, sort of late arriving, early departing. And he's trying to change that paradigm.
Yeah.
He's trying to do that by making certain that key is the entertainment that you came to see, which in this case is a basketball game or you know, by extension, the next concert that comes through there or, you know, whatever other events they might be holding in the facility. So again, kudos to them to just really say we can do better and we can do more. And let's see how we can bring not only our technologies, but others to create this atmosphere and this value that the typical fan, the basketball goer wants.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to watch. I mean, it's funny, my career has sort of been meshed with covering Steve Ballmer in different places. And this is the most fun. This is much more fun than talking about Windows NT server, I can tell you. Let's talk, if we can, a little bit just about the business side. How is the iFi system sold? When you go in there, is it a lease kind of thing? Is it, are people, you know, who pays for the construction? How does that all break down?
Yeah, look, the first thing to understand about us is we're a software company. We're not in the business of selling hardware. We don't make these cameras. These are off the shelf, pretty standard cameras. We don't make the on-prem compute, the servers. We don't make the cabling. We don't make the gates or the doors that one might use as an entry mechanism. We make the software that tracks people and objects through space. And so we charge as such, as a SaaS company would. And it depends a little bit on what you're trying to do in the space, how dense it is and what have you, into, you know, how much the costs are. But you know, again, because we go at it the way we go at it, it's very cost effective versus some other players out there and a lot more flexible. Like you can set the store up however you want. It doesn't matter to our system. It does matter a little bit the ceiling height, but we've got a lot of flexibility. It doesn't really matter if there's stanchions and we have to see around things. All of that's very doable. We can offer sort of different financial measures if need be. If there's a need to do leasing, we can do that. That's certainly helps alleviate sometimes a CapEx problem that some of these players have. But for the most part, we have an enterprise level SaaS agreement, and that's kind of how we approach it.
Is there any kind of revenue share based on the number of people handlers that just bring it on, whatever it can take, you know?
Yeah, look, there's lots of ways to try to crack the nut, but the simpler you make it, the easier it is. Sharing revenues can sometimes...
Right, because
you know, so how do you do it? It's like five for you and one for me, or three right. for you and one for me. Like people,
and it's going through a caterer sometimes.
Yeah, and businesses they struggle with that. They don't want to kind of do that. And it ultimately starts to be, well, what's fair? Well, and that's just not how you want to do things. So we try not to approach it that way. But again, we've gotten the cost down to be something that when you compare it to, you know, labor costs, I'll give you an example. One location that we opened in a facility in Europe saw a 60% reduction in the number of staff that need to staff the store, right? And with a 3x to 8x improvement in throughput, you know, now this isn't such a difficult ROI to figure out for them. You know, they can repurpose that staff in other parts of the stadium and not have that constant problem that they have of turnover. We were talking to one operator in the US, and they were a 1-year-old facility and they'd already had 100% turnover.
Oh, I believe it.
And so that's a big, big strain on your operations. I mean, your HR team's out constantly having to find the same store staff that everybody else who's running a store, whether it's a grocery store or otherwise, is still trying the same labor. I think when you start to look at a lot of those factors, you start to find that the ROI makes a lot of sense in these models.
When we return, we'll hear about iFi's mix of store shapes and sizes and how they fit in different stadium situations. More from Steve Carlin after the break.
JMA is a leading provider of distributed antenna systems in hundreds of stadiums worldwide, delivering the best performance, highest reliability, and lowest total cost of ownership. Our platform ensures that you're 5G ready when it comes time to add a private wireless 5G network to your existing venue infrastructure without a rip and replace, providing a foundation of wireless connectivity to improve the fan experience while reducing operating costs for stadium owners and broadcasters. Visit jmawireless.com/app to explore more.
I know iFi has several different store formats, and you know, I think some are clearly made to fit a space in a stadium, and then there are other ones that are just, you know, sort of built. I'm thinking like the pop-up stores, the ones that have been in Miami and in Detroit, which kind of feels like you could put those anywhere where there's space. What's the mix right now? Is there any one that's leading ahead of others? And what's sort of the average deployment time for, like, thinking like a big store, something that goes into an old area versus a drink lane? Or I'm thinking the one in Leicester, that looked like it was pretty minimal in terms of what kind of infrastructure it needed.
Yeah, so the first way to answer that question is it just depends on what the retailer is trying to do. In this case, it could be a stadium, you know, the food and beverage providers. If they're saying, hey, I want to address the pregame crowd outside, then either they're going to build a standalone store that looks, you know, like a store we'd see out on the street, or they drop a container in. And that was what you were asking about, the to-go option that we have is basically a container store. And the Philadelphia Eagles would be a perfect example. They just launched two of those out in front of the stadium there. We don't build those containers. I am not a construction company. I'm not going to be a construction company anytime soon. We don't have that capability or that expertise. So we partner in that case. And so it's depending upon what the retailer wants, it will dictate the cost. If they want no bones, pretty bare, then it's relatively inexpensive. If they want bells and whistles, then it'll be priced accordingly. And the same is true internally. So if we were to go into the concourse, you have a couple options. You can take a space that was already a facility like Detroit that you mentioned. Those were renovated belly up bars that still have the kitchen behind them. And that's as long as it takes your construction crew to come in to do, and whatever costs they charge you, you know, that's a contractor's cost, not an us cost. So those are pretty straightforward. And or you could do, like you said, you could purpose build something into a space in the concourse that typically had never had anything. And that could be as simple as, you know, just erecting almost like, an IKEA-like construction, or it could be a little more involved if that's what the vendor wanted. If they wanted something a little more permanent, then they would do it that way. I think, you know, the key is, for the most part, whether you're talking to us or any of the other players in this marketplace, none of us, Amazon included, are construction teams, right? We don't do that. So it's really up to the stadium, in this case, the food and beverage provider, the teams, what they want to do and how they want to do it. With the exception of maybe a drink lane, which again, we can have a third party construction prefab type scenario go on. Insofar as the timelines, it's really quick. You know, when we worked with Footprint Arena, opened 5 stores from the first day we had the conversation until those 5 stores launched all together was 9 weeks. Once we've got the green light, it's really quick. We'll say 4 to 6 weeks just to kind of be safe, because between Yumi and the lamppost, sometimes the drywaller doesn't show up when they're supposed to show up. And so if you say, if you say it's only a week, then they only give you a week. Yeah. And then when the drywaller doesn't show up and, you know, the concert's coming in Thursday night, you're like, uh-oh. So look, it's relatively quick to turn around. This is, we've deployed over 200 stores globally. We know how to do this really well. We've scaled. So this is not a science project anymore. So we can do this quickly and effectively.
Yeah. And I imagine as more and more of these stores come out and more of the catering people and the menu people, providers, you know, become more used to it, it'll be even faster too.
And we have partners, you know, right. I mean, we're not in this alone. We go get partners that are experts in what they do, whether that's a systems integrator to come in and turn the screws. And there's ways, you know, from a commercial standpoint to make this seamless for our clients.
I noticed the one store, probably won't visit anytime soon, the one over in the UK, featured draft beer, you know, which is kind of a cool thing. And I know some other ones have hot food. So it's a little bit of a challenge, right? So the drink lanes are easy, right? Canned beverages, bagged snacks. Are those an ROI challenge from your side, or is that something more from the venue caterer side, you know, on what they want to offer?
It is not an ROI challenge for us. In fact, it is not a challenge at all. Like whether it's a poured beer or a canned beer or a hot food box, doesn't matter. It's the same to our system, right? I mean, we're tracking the people and the objects in that space. We definitely suggest some operational upgrades in order to help facilitate the system. So for example, you know, we serve hot food at Kia Forum here in the US, pizzas and what have you. And they load the pizzas in a certain spot. And when you grab it, just like you grabbed a beer or a Coke, it doesn't really matter. And what's great about that, by the way, is it really allows them to merchandise how they want and really be creative. They are not limited to just a drink lane if they don't want to be, at least with our system. Again, we don't have any weight sensors that you have to stop and really fool around with and electrify things and what have you. So, and if they wanted to change the assortment, we can do it on the fly with an app on their phones, right? So if they ran out of pepperoni pizza or something,
right,
it's pretty easy for them to go, okay, it's only cheese now. It was all of that was taken into account. And the goal is to allow them to merchandise what they want, when they want, and how they want. All we do is keep track and generate a receipt.
Yeah, it's interesting. As you see more of these kind of models emerge, I think, you know, the simplest stuff was the easiest stuff, right? But then people are like, you know, why can't we do back this thing up to a full-size kitchen? As long as it comes out in the same spot and looks the same every time, right? Or even maybe just the same spot, right? Yeah. And you can program the camera, say whatever somebody takes from that spot is X.
Yeah, Paul, the funnily enough, the issue becomes making sure the operations team of the stadium is ready for the fact that the throughput is so much higher.
Yeah.
Typically, those games you're talking about, they can't pour pints fast enough.
Right.
They can't boil water fast enough on a colder day for tea and coffee. You know, they run out of meat pies because people go through there so fast. It's just so different than they're used to at the belly up that can take some, I was going to say just a couple games before they kind of really find their balance of what's the right amount of food to prepare. But it's game changing, like truly game changing.
Yeah, it is interesting, right? It's not the technology that's the issue here, right? It's how fast can you cook the pizzas? How many beers can it? I mean, soccer is a real interesting question because a lot of times you only have 15 minutes and that's it. And if you're going to be pouring an individual beer every time, some people are going to go without.
You probably saw we opened at FC Copenhagen last week, Champions League game, and just phenomenal. The other thing, sort of back to your original question, like how likely is this to continue to grow? The adoption that the fans in Copenhagen had for this technology was staggering. Like it was as though they'd been using it for years. We saw more interactions before the game started than some of those other stores that we've talked about have in the entire game. Here's to the Danish. They seem to embrace technology in a way that others may not, but it was just really exciting to see. And again, it became some operational learnings like, okay, well, you've got to have the proper amount of beer ready because they almost picked them clean. It's a really good problem for these providers, food and beverage providers to have.
That's a great story. we're kind of coming up against our time while here. I did have one more question I wanted to ask you, which was about the just sort of the funding state of the business. You know, we covered the announcement, I guess it's a couple of years ago now, when Verizon Ventures came in. Is the business, are you guys doing well? Do you need more funding? Are you looking for another round? What's headcount and hiring like? Also, what's the relationship like with Verizon? Because they seem to be quite active these days in promoting different new technologies into stadiums that aren't necessarily like 5G related directly. They're doing entry technology. They're doing some other things. So maybe just a little bit of a state of the state here before we close out.
Yeah, look, Verizon's been a great partner of ours since they came in. To your point, they did invest in us and have been, you know, really helping bring us in a large way, specifically to North American sporting arenas. They obviously cover quite a bit more than that. So, you know, the relationships they already have with these facilities is huge to us. Our team has stayed relatively static in size since I started. By design, we recognize that we didn't need to have a big increase in the number of people. So, but consequently, you only have so many people out selling. And so to have somebody like Verizon be able to make the introduction, a warm introduction to the decision makers, is huge on our behalf. So we're very thankful to have them around and working with us and provide the credibility that the Verizon name brings to these. And you're right, they have lots of really interesting pieces to their technology stack that they can bring to bear at these locations. So it's really fun to see what they're doing. But yeah, overall, we're doing really well. You know, I'm really proud of the team and excited about what we've been able to accomplish in the last year and a bit. You know, 2024 is going to be a huge year for us, not only because of, you know, the Intuit Dome coming live, but also all the other locations that we've got. We've got some strong partners throughout Europe, some strong partners throughout Asia and Australia. And just a lot going on. So it's a great time to be here at iFi. And so, yeah, we're cooking along.
Well, it's great. As usual, we will cover it quite aggressively because that's what we do. And it'll be fun to watch. Steve, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate your time.
We really appreciate it, Paul. Thanks so much for having me.
We'd like to take a quick moment to thank the sponsors of Stadium Tech Report, whose support allows us to continue our efforts to bring our objective, unbiased, and unpaid-for content to the stadium technology marketplace. Our supporters include our co-producing sponsor, AmpThink, our survey sponsor, Verizon, our podcast title sponsors, Matsing and JMA, and our newsfeed sponsors, which include Wicket, Boingo, Bolden Networks, and Comscope. The Stadium Tech Report podcast is brought to you by Stadium Tech Report, the go-to publication for stadium technology news, analysis, and commentary. Technical production for the Stadium Tech Report podcast is led by creative director Dan Grimsley and digital designer Jackie Wen. Web and design work is by John David, Matthew Lowe, and Finney Koshy. All contents of the Stadium Tech Report podcast are copyright Stadium Tech Report. Audio, video, and print content may not be reused without the express written consent of Stadium Tech Report.